pretty frothy, and with a fun, frivolous, lowbrow froth that your group chat excels at. We're here to talk about the best things in the world of pop culture, from celebrities to influencers and all of the nonsense in between. And you're of course joined by me, Elle, a London-based 28-year-old writer who spends a lot of time chatting and reading about the fun, silly topics that maybe your boss, your parent, your partner, whoever, questions why you enjoy so much. Each week we're going to be talking about the best bits that pop culture has to offer, and this is your safe space to enjoy, dissect and binge on the frothy nonsense that brings you a smile. Howdy folks, how are we all doing? How is everybody? I'm going to sort of be up front here and say that this is definitely not going to drop on time. I know that, and I suspect you know that whenever you're listening, because it's a very busy week for me. Your girl has plans. There's been two concerts, there's the theatre, and there are only so many hours in the day in which to work my full-time job, sleep, exercise, commute, record this, research this, see friends, and now apparently live a very sort of high-flying evening life. So apologies in advance. And also at the time of recording, guys, the pollen is killing me. I am dying a slow death and it is so unpleasant. I am itchy and just like so bunged up and just not thriving. I do not feel fun, flirty, sexy, joyful, any of it really. I just feel very sorry for myself with no real reason to, because I don't have a cold. It's not my poor immune system. It's just flowers. I have been taken down by pollen and it is a struggle. And before anyone says anything, I am dosed up. There are so many antihistamines in my system right now. It's a miracle I'm not asleep. I'm not winning. So if you're also in that boat, welcome. There's space. I'd love as many of you as possible to be suffering so that I am not alone. But if you're not suffering, please go out and enjoy the outside, the warm weather, because even with the rain and the thunderstorms at the moment, it is still glorious. And I did that at work the other day and everyone just looked at me bizarrely. Apparently warm, windy weather is not everyone else's favourite, but I'm thriving when it's a pollen-free environment. I'm going to stop rambling now. And instead, we're going to dive in to the best of the brain rot, which, of course, are the silly stories that got us talking this week. Our first story is that Jared Leto has been accused of sexual misconduct by 9 women at the time of recording. And I read this on joe.co.uk. They weren't the people to break the news. I believe Airmail broke the news. And since having had a dig around, several other platforms have reported this story. But I wanted to flag that I have not seen this anywhere else. I had to go looking for the other coverage of this and I only stumbled across it on Joe because I was just having a browse on Joe. And it has astounded me that this has not come across my socials yet. Whether or not that's because I just have a truly impenetrable echo chamber on my social channels of things I like, and obviously it's not Jared, so he's not in there. Or if it just hasn't really been picked up yet, I don't know. Of course, with a news story like this breaking, the reporters would have gone to Jared and his team for a statement. So they will have known that it's coming. And there is, of course, always the chance there that they've already decided their plan of attack or plan of defence or whatever you want to call it. And, you know, there's always a possibility that they're already turfing and funneling huge amounts of money into redirecting conversation and focus. I'd be surprised if that was the case, partly because, yes, they could have said go on this and decide on that plan of action, but it takes a little while to manipulate an algorithm to such the extent that people just aren't seeing it, or if they are seeing it, they're believing a certain narrative. So I'm inclined to say that this just hasn't really landed yet, and I don't really know why that would be, but that to me seems like the stronger argument. Although I've got nothing else really to back it up on that. So interesting either way. And it therefore wouldn't surprise me if some of you, even half of you, haven't heard the news. Because, yeah, I just haven't really seen it being talked about. The actual allegations themselves relate to Jared and teenagers, but they are historic allegations. So one woman shared her story about how when she was 16 in 2006, so almost 2 decades ago, she met Jared and gave him her phone number, because at 16, when a celeb asks, of course you give your phone number out. She was apparently invited by him to a party that she said no to. And the story gives the impression this happened semi-regularly. She was called by him and they did speak on the phone and those conversations did turn sexual. And this seems to be very much like a copy and paste storyline. So the model Laura LaRue shared almost the exact same story. She met Jared when she was, again, 16 and he was 36. And she also shared that when she was 17, she was round his house. And at one point, he just walked out of a room completely naked. Jared's team have very much said that this did not happen and that the communication between Laura and Jared was at all times appropriate and that nothing sexual happened. But another woman has said that when she was round his house, he would ask her inappropriate questions, and that once when she was 18, he suddenly pulled out his penis and started masturbating in front of her, which is just foul if true. And it was also reported by Air Mail that the LA music producer and DJ Ali Teals reposted a 2012 Facebook status to her Instagram story saying, "You're not really in LA until Jared Leto tries to force himself on you backstage in a kilt and a snow hat." She apparently also shared to her story that Jared had assaulted her when she was 17. Jared's team have very much denied all of the allegations made by all of the women, and Jared himself has not said anything. And I very much know that I am a fan of sticking and following to the line that, you know, innocent until proven guilty. Because if we don't, like, guys, we're all fucked. Like, we have to start with innocent until proven guilty. And I fully respect that. But I do also think that we have learned time and again that when multiple people, especially women, speak out and when they are happy to put their names to their claims, that they are telling the truth. Especially when talking about a celebrity with as much sway as I suspect Jared Leto has. He is a huge name. Like, yes, he's very much not present on my side of the internet, and he's really not in the content I consume, but he has been in some really major projects over the last 10 years. You know, we're talking like Dallas Buyers Club, Suicide Squad, House of Gucci with Lady Gaga. Like, this man is powerful, well-connected, and no doubt incredibly rich. And I think, therefore, to come out as a group and stand against him takes real guts. I do also think that this story is not the kind of news you can ignore. And so I suspect, as I said, that Jared and his team will already have some sort of media plan in process, or in action, I guess I should say. And I would not be surprised whatsoever if they are watching Russell Brand's approach, or did watch or have studied Russell Brand's approach to his own very similar controversy last year, early this year. I can't remember when it happened now. And I have no doubt they're taking notes about what they did and don't like from his approach, what they feel worked, what they feel didn't. And they will be using him to learn how best to tackle this. That being said, I think it's really important to flag that Russell and Jared in some ways are very different celebrities. Russell just transcends so many platforms. In some ways, he's a YouTuber. I mean, he is a YouTuber. He's also a movie star, but he is a YouTuber as well. And I think with that kind of one-to-one or face-to-face kind of content style that he puts out to his fans, it would have been almost impossible for him not to recognize and talk on the allegations he faced at all. But I don't think Jared will talk about these allegations, partly because he doesn't have that kind of platform relationship with his fans or anything of the sort, really. But I also think that Jared will leave this up to his team to talk on his behalf, because I don't think he wants to be pulled into the story. I don't think he wants the story to have any more license than it currently does. And I do think celebs often interpret the idea of letting the team talk on your behalf as keeping like a layer of distance between them and the story. It's a totally false layer of distance, because the team effectively is the celebrity in so many ways, and it is very much viewed as the consumer or the fan, whatever you talk about it. The team is the celebrity, and they are one and the same in how they are believed, understood, and interpreted. But I also think that by keeping the narrative to his team, or keeping the conversation to his team and not himself, he and his team therefore control his side of the narrative. And that means that by only going through these official channels, or only by securing statements through these official channels and deciding not to speak about it publicly, he kind of enforces this sort of own rule and this sort of self-barrier where he has protected himself from being caught unawares in LA by a random passerby with a mobile phone who could ask him very quickly on camera a question about the story. But by, in his own mind and with his team, having decided that he is not going to address it, he defends himself from the slight risk of him being rusty on his media training and saying something that will backfire when it goes viral online, in a way that Russell Brand is not protected from because he is so much at the forefront of his campaign and so much the face of it. And I think that's really interesting. I, of course, could be proven completely wrong, but I do not think Jared will speak on this. I think his team will work overtime to hide this. I think it will stay in the press for some time, especially as, you know, the process of these allegations works its way through the system. Do I think that it will impact his work? Not at all. I would be amazed if it did, simply because he is a male actor and all you need to do is look at Brad Pitt to understand the impact that abuse and assault allegations have on a career. It's not massive. You know, Brad is still working despite the allegations that Angelina Jolie put in those child custody battles. And I think that's entirely infuriating. I think he probably is, well, I am inclined to trust and believe the women who have spoken out, but I'll be really interested to see where this goes and how his team navigate it, because I think in such a tumultuous time online, it's a really tricky one to navigate, but I also think it's also one of the best times for this story to drop because we have such a rise in extremist male propaganda. I don't know how else to describe it. You know exactly who I'm talking about and the men there. And it therefore wouldn't surprise me if the shock and the outrage of his towards his actions is really kept within a certain audience, and therefore maybe actually it does dilute the impact it'll have on his public image. We shall see. Our second story, and one we absolutely have to talk about, and this is of course updates on the Blake Lively, Justin Baldoni court case. I'm going to be honest with you guys, I researched this, prepped it, wrote the run sheet, and then obviously did not record for the when I should have, because I had a very busy social life. And in that time, the story progressed, as it always does when you are slacking. So we're going to kind of mash both news updates together and have maybe a slightly longer segment than we normally do. To give the facts once again, Blake Lively sued Justin Baldoni in December of 2024, after they'd worked together on the film It Ends With Us. They played the leads in the film, and Justin was the director, and his production company, Wayfarer, had bought the rights to the film. So it was very much a Wayfarer project they brought Blake into. And part of her accusations against him included those of sexual harassment and a smear campaign. In January of this year, so a month later, Justin countersued Blake and her husband Ryan, or Ryan Reynolds, I don't know why I feel I'm on first name terms with Ryan Reynolds, for $400 million or £295 million on claims of civil extortion, defamation and invasion of privacy. His suit claimed that Blake had, and I'm quoting, stole the film. And this was very much based on the fact that she apparently had threatened to not promote it, and that she and others promoted a false narrative that Justin had sexually assaulted her and launched a smear campaign against her. This then bubbles away for several months. We occasionally see news about it. It's still talked about online. And then in May of this year, so last month, Taylor Swift was summoned to court after it was alleged that she had encouraged Justin to accept script rewrites by Blake. And Taylor's legal team very quickly jumped on this and squashed it. I think it's important to say that she had a song on the soundtrack of the film, but that seems to have been about it in terms of her involvement. She is, of course, though, famously very good friends with Blake and Ryan. One of their daughters is the voice at the beginning of her song Gorgeous. I'm getting far too close to just diving into Taylor Swift and just doing a deep dive on Taylor, so I'm going to stop there. But it famously, they are very good friends. It is very well known. And her team came out and said that she was not involved in any of the casting or creative decisions, and that she never saw an edit or made any notes of the film. The subpoena was dropped about 2 weeks later, and her legal team, They came out strongly. They left absolutely no room for debate or argument and called the order an unwarranted fishing expedition. We then have a few more weeks, and then on the 3rd of June, it was announced, or it was reported, that Blake had attempted to withdraw, or was attempting to withdraw, two of the claims she'd made about Justin including the claim of intentional infliction of emotional distress. And in response to this claim, Justin's legal team had asked Blake to release her medical records, including her therapy notes, so that they could form a defence and argue against her claim that she had received severe emotional distress and pain, humiliation and embarrassment. There is, of course, speculation about why Blake has now pulled these claims. I honestly, if the argument is simply that she doesn't want to share her therapy notes, I think absolutely fair enough. She has been raked through the coals over the last almost year. And maybe it is a year at this point. I can't remember when the film came out. Either way, abhorrent to try and ask somebody to share their therapy notes. I think that's foul. But Blake's lawyers have come out and actually said that, you know, this claim by Justin's team was entirely a press stunt and that her defence had decided to drop those claims simply because they were streamlining and focusing her case. They added, and I'm going to quote here, "The Baldoni Wayfarer strategy of filing retaliatory claims has exposed them to expansive new damages claims under Californian law, rendering certain of Miss Lively's original claims no longer necessary. Miss Lively continues to allege emotional distress as part of numerous other claims in her lawsuit, such as sexual harassment and retaliation, and massive additional compensatory damages on all of her claims." It would not surprise me whatsoever if Justin's team had gone out with this line of attack as a press stunt. I think I've said it before. If not, it's my friends are probably sick of me hearing it. Justin Baldoni's case was very much formulated and written and published, because there was that website, or there is that website, in a way that was very easily digestible to your average Joe, to somebody who is not legally trained. And I strongly believe, because it meant that people like me or my next door neighbour could read it, understand it, turn it into sort of a bullet point list of arguments, and then put it out for the world to discuss, whether that's, you know, as a Twitter thread or on TikTok or Reddit or wherever. And that boosts and is very much a pro-Justin approach, because obviously it's come from his legal team. And I think keeps public opinion, or is aimed or designed to keep public opinion on his side. So all very interesting. A day later, on the 4th of June, so after I have prepped everything, a New York judge comes out and dismisses Justin's countersuit. They basically said that Justin and his production company, and I'm going to quote here, have not adequately alleged that Lively's threats were wrongful extortion rather than legally permissible hard bargaining or renegotiation of working conditions. Which feels like a bit of a slap in the face, and I kind of love. And that basically, Justin or Justin's team had not managed to prove defamation because, and I'm going to quote here again, Wayfarer parties have not alleged that Lively is responsible for any statements other than the statements in her lawsuit which are privileged. It gets a bit waffly and a bit lawyery, if I'm going to be entirely honest, but some of Justin's case focused on an interview that Blake had done with the New York Times about her time on It Ends With Us, or the It Ends With Us set. And the judge basically determined that the evidence didn't show that the New York Times was acting with malice in publishing their story, and that they had no obvious motive of favouring Blake's version of events. Blake's lawyers have obviously come out and called the opinion, I'm going to quote here, a total victory and a complete vindication for Blake Lively, along with those that Justin Baldoni and the Wayfarer parties dragged into their retaliatory lawsuit, including Ryan Reynolds, Leslie Sloan and the New York Times. She, of course, posted on Instagram and said that, like so many others, I felt the pain of a retaliatory lawsuit, including the manufactured shame that tries to break us. While the suit against me was defeated, so many don't have the resources to fight back, and that she was more resolved than ever to continue to stand for every woman's right to have a voice in protecting themselves. Interestingly, Justin's team, or Justin, or however you want to phrase it, they're allowed to amend and refile their allegations related to the interference with contracts by the 23rd of June. So there is a chance that this will continue for another couple of months. But I think really interesting that time and again, it does appear that Blake either not only put forward the more concrete and defensible argument, but also that it very much seemed that the court was very much on Blake's side. And I think fascinating to show that without being rude, the people who know, who are educated in this and understand it, and this is their day to day, so we're talking the lawyers and the courts and whatever, have from the off, I think, or definitely appear to be very much on Blake was winning that argument there, but sort of in the court of the people, or, you know, the followers, the fans, whatever, it has continually been pro-Justin, anti-Blake rhetoric. There was, of course, evidence that Justin and Justin's team were turfing, certainly post-wrapping and filming and pre and during the press sort of process and promotion of the filming. And I cannot remember the stat off the top of my head now, but really fascinatingly, when there was huge public uproar about Justin Baldoni and Blake, and it was obviously very pro-Justin, very anti-Blake, on Twitter, then, you know, the number of tweets going out, or X, whatever you want to call it, the number of tweets going out about this and the number that were pro-Justin was mammoth, just incomprehensible numbers, absolutely huge. But the research showed, and I'm really annoyed that I have completely started on this tangent and cannot now remember who I am quoting. The research showed that the majority of the accounts that were tweeting pro-Justin, anti-Blake were new accounts. They had been created in the last couple of months. They hadn't really tweeted or posted about anything else. They were simply there to join that conversation and join that conversation on a particular angle. And I think that's fascinating. And I also think it's really interesting to show that I personally think that this is more reputationally damaging now to Justin than it will ever be to Blake. Despite the fact that she was dragged through the coals, I think having an official announcement that you were in the right there, and I think with the way the internet can forget so quickly what happened weeks ago, if not months and years ago, I think she will walk out of this relatively unscathed in the court of public opinion, but I think this will stick with Justin for some time. Although, as I said with our last story, I do think that male celebs have a much easier time dealing with controversy and mistreatment of women and all sorts and getting away with it and having no real impact on their career. And I have no doubt that he will also, for the most part, not face long-term damage from this. Our third and final story doesn't have a lot of substance yet, but I'm always a believer of where there is smoke, there is fire, and I think there's fire here, folks. And this is the news that Katy Perry and Orlando Bloom are apparently splitting up, or have apparently recently split up. It's been reported everywhere, but it was People who I think first reported the news. And I trust People to only run with the story when they have fully concrete evidence. Their anonymous source said that Katy had been deeply frustrated with the reception of her new album. It's not gone down well, guys, and this has made her very stressed and put some tension on the relationship, which I'll be honest doesn't scream breakup. Everyone goes through stress and tension from work that impacts their relationship. But it was then sort of collaborated with a second source that was reported by Page Six, who apparently told Page Six that it's over and that the couple are apparently waiting until Katy wraps up her tour in December before they announce it officially. To give it a better backstory, Katy and Orlando reportedly first started dating back in 2016. They broke up after about a year of dating in 2017 and then got back together in 2018. Orlando proposed in 2019 and they welcomed a daughter, Daisy, in 2020. And really interestingly, kept Daisy completely out of the spotlight for the first 4 or 5 years of her life. We obviously knew she existed. I think when Katy had her, she posted a picture of Daisy's hand, but we've never seen her face. They've kept it very private. I fully respect that. I completely understand why. And then earlier this year, they showed her face to the entire world on national TV with the SpaceX launch. So, completely undoing years of work to keep her out of the spotlight. I don't really quite understand that logic there, but also it's not my place to. So, fascinating nonetheless. I think also really interesting, it's kind of widely known that these two have an interesting relationship. They repeatedly talk about how much, you know, being together and having a successful relationship is hard work. and I just never quite give the impression they're happy to be together, if I'm going to be entirely honest. So this doesn't come as a surprise to me, which I think is why I also believe that this news is probably correct. But I do feel sorry for Katie, because this woman has had a rough year. Over the past 12 months or so, she's released the single Women's World, which was an immediate punchline because she worked with the producer DJ Luke, who has faced sexual assault allegations in the past, I believe from Kesha. And so just complete irony that this female empowerment pro-women song has come from, well, a producer that people don't believes in that whatsoever. So that was an immediate sort of shot in the foot. Her current tour, the Lifetimes tour, has been totally ridiculed and pulled apart online, which has led to low ticket sales and cancelled dates. She was also, of course, mocked for her trip to space. We've talked about that before. I'm not going to get into it again, but I'd argue justifiably so, if I'm going to be entirely honest with you. And then in an interview she did on Call Her Daddy for the Lifetimes tour, it was promo for that music tour, I didn't think it came across that badly, if I'm going to be honest with you guys. I thought she came across really just honest, down to earth, quite funny. But she made a slight joke slash comment that acts of service are her love language. So, you know, if Orlando does the dishes or tidies the kitchen, she's always in the mood to reward him, if you understand what I'm getting at. And that was also really quite widely joked about, ridiculed, just criticised online, which I didn't quite get. I think it's funny. I have girlfriends who would say the same thing and I get it. So yeah, either way, she's had a really rough year. I think mostly, if I'm going to be honest, entirely the fault of her team. I think she's being widely misled at the moment. I don't know who's in charge of these press decisions, but I do not think they're doing a good job. And yeah, now news of the split has been leaked. I don't think it's come from her camp, if I'm going to be entirely honest. It might have come from his. I don't think so, though. I think because she is having such a bad year in the public eye, I think they want to announce this very carefully. And this is not how I would go about it. And I don't think this is how they would go about it. So I do think this is somebody talking when they shouldn't. But I also do, as I said, believe it to be true because it is people who have announced it and because of the already public understanding of her and Orlando's relationship. So we shall see, but an interesting little tidbit and one I thought you'd enjoy. It, of course, wouldn't be a frothy episode without a couple of recommendations. I have two this week. They're both articles, so if that's not really your cup of tea, then sorry, my recs this week are not for you. The first is another Times article. I know I recommended a Times article last week, but they've got some good stuff online at the moment. I'm sure it's in their newspapers as well, but I'm an online kind of gal. And it's an article about a married couple who are working to get kids off of smartphones. The couple themselves have three young children. I think their oldest is about 9. And the article is more of a think piece or a profile piece rather than like a closed loop story, because they're not pitching a final product or like a genius solution to tackle kids and iPhones. But it was a really interesting read. It gave me something to think about, which I always like to do. And I think, you know, yes, I'm not a parent. I kind of look at the issue of kids and social media and smartphones and technology with a slightly sort of detached view because I have no real world experience there. I'm 28. I got my first phone when I was 12 and it was a brick, and I didn't get my first smartphone until I was 14, 15? I don't really know. I can't remember now. But I was really interested about Australia's move to obviously ban under 16s from social media earlier this year. And I think if that interested you, this article will interest you. And it's not, I mean, it's a longer article than I'd normally recommend, but it is just packed full of content. There's a few name dropping because people like Benedict Cumberbatch have supported the movement. But yeah, I think it's worth your time. A bit of an interesting read, maybe a Sunday read if you're having a slow morning. But yeah, give it a look. And then my second recommendation is an article by Vulture on Addison Rae, her new album, and her move to rebrand to Addison. And I'm not sure if it was the album drop or sort of more centralised push from her team, but there are a couple of articles out about Addison at the moment, all of which are well worth your time. I just really enjoyed Vulture's one, so which is why I've recommended Vulture's. What I think is really interesting is that, yes, there is a push to rebrand her to Addison. She's dropping her middle name, Rae. And that is obviously coming from herself and her team. On Spotify currently, she is still Addison Rae. And I know that because Diet Pepsi is one of my go-to songs that I'm running at the moment. It's a little slow, but I'm a slow runner, so it kind of works. But it was interesting. I think especially interesting because I won't lie to you, I am not the biggest fan of her new album. I've only listened to it once completely. Obviously, I've heard other songs in passing because they shuffle through on Spotify. But it hasn't yet been for me. I'm sure it will grow on me. But critics have loved it, and I think fans have quite liked it as well. So I'm definitely in the minority there. But interesting nonetheless, and I think really fascinating when we remember that she is a TikToker turned pop star. And she's done it successfully. Like, yes, I just said that the music is not for me most of the time. And yes, I am obsessed with Diet Pepsi. But I think it's undeniable that she has made that change successfully, especially because people like Charlie XCX are working with her and talking about her. And that in itself is impressive and therefore I think well worth a deep dive. So if you have the time, give it a look, give it a read, because it adds context and depth to her character that I think is just fascinating. I think I've already used that word, but I'm still caught up on the article, and therefore I think it's worth your time. And now it's time for Pop to Pin, which is like a shallow dive this week, and I'm hoping to come back to. Last week, guys, I promised that I would watch Yellowstone on Netflix because an article had swayed me on it. Despite the fact friends and family had been singing this show's praises for months, if not a year, I had not jumped on board. And then I read a very out-of-date article, and that swayed me. I can't tell you why. I'd normally say very easily swayed, but it took some time, and then all of a sudden I was off the cliff. I have tried. I promise you I have tried. I have watched the first half of the first episode twice, and I did like it. It is good. I think I will like the whole episode when I eventually get there, but both times I have fallen asleep, and I think that means I'm just starting the TV show too late in the night. But yeah. If you're looking for something new and you don't mind a bit of a drama and a bit of a cowboy theme, then I think this is potentially one for you. It's definitely a little gritty, I think it's fair to say. It's not... Put it this way, it felt... As somebody who has never been to a cattle ranch or to America, or I don't think I've even ridden a horse, it felt very realistic. So take from that what you will, because obviously I have no context to compare it to. But the first half of the first episode felt realistic and quite gritty and real life-esque, while also obviously being a TV drama adaptation, whatever you want to call it. Drama, it's not an adaptation. I'm waffling. But I enjoyed it. So I am going to try and go back again and watch a whole episode, if not a whole series. And I'm really hoping you'll join me because I am excited by it. And it's been a while since TV has got me excited. And then something I've shallow dived this week, and I'm definitely coming back to. And this is an episode of the Unplanned podcast, which we've spoken about before. Obviously, it's Matt and Abby's podcast, and I'm not going to get any further into them. We have talked about them in depth before, but it's not a podcast I normally listen to. However, it is a podcast that I am more and more getting clips of on my Instagram Reels and TikTok, and I'm sure that's because I'm staying to watch them, and therefore the algorithm is feeding me more of them. But recently, we had Mika and Sarah on, and Mika and Sarah are a TikTok couple. Well, they're a couple who are on TikTok, who I started following at least a year ago, if not more than, because they're obviously both in the arts and drama and singing world of things. I don't know what their actual day jobs are, but they can both sing very well. They are both very... very good at sort of doing sort of musical-esque content on their TikTok channel, I sound old as anything. Anyway, point being, I was enjoying their content, nothing I'd seen before. They sing together, they dance together, they're just a bit goofy and funny and silly, and that's up my street, so I liked it. Since then, they have had a child together. I think he's about 8 months now, and I could be wrong. He's not quite toddler-sized, put it that way. And their content is still very similar. I think they were married when they started, but I could be wrong. Either way, they're definitely married now. And they were on the Unplanned podcast. And the clips I've seen have fascinated me because it turns out Sarah was married prior to her marriage with Mika. And he came out as gay. And obviously the marriage therefore broke down because, well, it's not what either of them wanted. And obviously they speak about that with, like, a lot of love, and then explain how they started their relationship and their move from sleeping together to then deciding to not have sex again before marriage, and waiting, I think, several years before getting married, and kind of what that meant for their relationship. And yeah, fascinating. Not something I'd normally expect from that TikTok couple, but something I was curious and really kind of like amazed at, and something I want to, yeah, dive into. So I will be finding time at some point to listen to that episode. If you got this far, thank you so, so much. I know I'm a bit sniffly and I know I'm a bit congested, and some of my letters are not sounding quite as they should. So if you stuck with me, I appreciate it so much. I hope you liked what you heard. You can, of course, find us for more fun on TikTok and Instagram. Although, having said that, I've not filmed this episode because I do not look good. I have the reddest nose known to man and very itchy eyes. So yeah, there's not actually that much fun stuff coming this week, but either way, give us a follow if you can. And if you like what you heard, please support the podcast in the charts by giving a follow, a subscribe, whatever the button says on the platform you're on. It's greatly appreciated. Have a lovely week, and I'll see you next week. Bye, guys. I'm